Viewers, listeners, welcome to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. My guest today is somebody I've just met. He's somebody that I've spoken to very briefly on the telephone. I could tell from the tone that he's got a passion for the industry. He cares deeply. So I'm really looking forward to this podcast, and I'm really looking forward to chatting to Neil Jefferson. Neil, Chief Executive of the HBF, House Builders Federation. Thanks for your time.
Thanks,
How
Steve.
Are you?
Great to be here. Great. Really good to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
No, my pleasure. I really do mean it. Thank you for making the time. It's an important part of this podcast, the residential development market, particularly house building, something that I've been involved in agency terms for longer than I want to remember. One of the questions I'd just like to ask, how did you get into the industry? How did your journey, why and how?
Yeah,
really?
No, that's a great question. I mean, in some ways, looking back on it, it was never in doubt. You know, from a teenager, young teens, kid, playing with Lego, building houses, and absolutely loved it. And then we moved around a lot. My father was in the services. But then when we did settle, it turned out that the neighbours either side both worked in the architectural profession. One was an architect, one was a technician. And I was really interested in that. And then you do the work experience. And I was kind of expected to go on and do a degree straight from school, but I didn't. I went into the architectural practice where I'd done some work experience and learned the hard way, really. You know, this was before computer-aided design, stood up at a drawing board, yeah. Did a load of church work and factories. But housing was, we worked for local developers and some big developers. And I learned a lot. So this is from the age of 17. Went to the local technical college and did building studies. Still, yeah, probably thinking at some point I might go on and do architecture. But at some point you do realise, you know, your limitations and design wasn't, you know, I was practical, but I wasn't the best artist. And then the partner took me to one side and said, you know, you should be getting off to do a degree, but not in architecture. You're not going to make it.
That's what he said. In building, yeah. As brutal as that.
It was absolutely, and he was quite brutal. Back in the day, that things were different then, weren't they? And So I did building surveying. But the building college I went to, there's some alumni from there because Jeff Fairbairn, who was the chief exec of Persimmon, and Stephen Boyes, who is currently the chief operating officer of Barratt, both went to same York Building College where
did
I went.
Really?
The difference between us is only Stephen has got his name up on the wall for Student of the Year. Yeah, Jeff and I, when I think if anyone said Neil Jefferson was here, they'd say, who?
Go back, put it up now. They might not notice.
Yeah, you know, I might do a bit of carpentry and put it up. So then I did, I did go. I mean, I'm a real advocate for this. I went to university when I was 21, so I knew what I wanted to do. And actually, when you get there, you know, I had experience. I'd worked for 4 or 5 years as well.
Yeah,
really enjoyed it. And then I was living up north at the time. That was Newcastle. Moved back to York where the family are, and got into. An organisation called National House Building Council, NHBC, which is where I spent most of my career. But yeah, looking back, I guess it was never in doubt. It was always going to be building. And if I look back on it, my preferences all the way through early career was residential. It was housing, and I'm still fascinated by it. And as you say, a real passion for it.
Well, you can, when I spoke to you on the telephone, it came across. Mm. Your time at the NHBC, you had a long time there, didn't you?
I did. I started out in the most junior technical role, which was assistant surveyor, working with, more senior people, older people. I was the youngest in the office, but you just soak it in, don't you? In the same way that when I first started working a drawing board and getting out on site, yeah, you soak it in so quickly. But I sort of moved through the ranks at NHBC. I did a year in the York office, and this job went up on a notice board for head office in Amersham, working for the chief exec. I didn't know where Amersham was, Steve, but I applied for it, and then the boss came to interview me in York, and I got the job. So then I had to come down here to London, and it was like a bit like a scene out of Crocodile Dundee, with me coming into King's Cross, finding my way across town to Amersham. And but then that moved to head office and just being exposed, you know, HBF is, I thought NHBC was towards the centre of the industry. HBF is right at the middle. But during those years at NHBC, I met a lot of people. I learned a lot. I enjoyed working on a lot of things. And that was a really, really good really good time for me.
So what made you, what made the turn come into place for you to come from the NHBC to move?
Yeah, I think probably I'd done 25 years. I was at the level of...
This is where I say you don't look old enough.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think it came time for a change, and there's always push and pull factors. And I think the push was only really that I'd reached the most senior level. I'd actually had 6 months of leading the organisation on an interim basis.
Right.
And I think then when someone comes in on a permanent basis, you think, well, I really enjoyed that, but maybe this marks the time for me to think about what's next. And the pull was really, I know you've met him recently, with Stuart Baisley.
Right.
So Stuart and I had known each other for a very long time on the boards of organisations, just coming across each other in the industry. And we'd done some good stuff together. And then so when Stuart mentioned that the Home Builders Federation was looking in terms of their own succession, it was a big change from quite a large organisation to quite a small one. But if I reflected, Steve, on the things that I'd really enjoyed at NHBC, it was actually the industry improvement campaigns.
Yep.
You know, it's fine running a business and running people and looking after all the things that you think are important when you're young, you know, being the complete manager. But then where you take your pleasure is something else. And I'd really enjoyed some of the things that we'd worked on at NHBC. Some of those things with HBF, like the customer satisfaction survey,
yep,
was probably quite notable. Improving standards, improving the consumer protection for home buyers. And probably one of the things most notably was, and this sounds ridiculous, but back towards the end of the 90s, there was a problem reputationally with the industry where homes were being handed over that weren't complete.
Yep.
And we needed to do something about that. So I ran a project at the time across the industry. It was quite risky. But looking back on it, it was a game changer because
it needed to be done.
You know, people were moving in and sometimes being incentivized to move in without homes being complete. So in terms of improving customer satisfaction and reputation of the industry, I oversaw delivery of that project. And it was reflecting on all that kind of stuff that made me think, well, a lot of this has been done in partnership with the Home Builders Federation, HBF. So, after some consideration, I thought, well, yeah, you know, if I want to do this type of thing, there's no better organisation to be in to do it.
And was it totally different when you went, as you say, it's bigger to a smaller situation, but the passion was there. You knew the importance that it had to change.
Absolutely. You know, I think there's, you know, the industry's got a high regard for both organisations. They've got different purposes, but HBF is working for the industry collectively. And when we need to mobilise, we're good at it. And that's one of the things in the few years I've been at HBF, you would say, yeah, when we need to work together, we really do. And I really enjoy that. So the scale is a big thing. You know, at NHBC, there's a lot of people and bigger budgets. But in some ways at HBF, you know, I take a huge amount of pleasure from what we achieve with a smaller team and watching people develop within the business as well. So there are differences. There are things in common. I'm still very fond of NHBC. When people ask me at the old place, you know, what do you think? I can't choose between them. It's like choosing between two children.
Yeah,
they're just different, but love them both.
So HBF in good shape?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think Stuart might have said this when he was in to see you the other week, but what he's done over the last 15 years has put HBF in a completely different footing. As I say, when we work together across the industry, we're so powerful. We've been into government this week on an important issue, and it's great to see how we can all pull together. So it's absolutely the leading trade body. I always joke that in some ways the construction industry, with all of these trade federations, it's a bit like Life of Brian, you know, when you've got the National Front of Judea and the People's National Front, and no one quite knows what all these groups stand for. But the Home Builders Federation, HBF, stands out. Our membership build about 80% of all homes across England and Wales, which is a massive footprint. And that ranges from, you know, almost all of the major house builders through the mid-size to a long tail of SMEs who we do our best for. So I wish there were more companies in the industry, but the number of SMEs has fallen massively in the last few decades just because of the complexity, the risks, mainly because of planning delays and the impact that has on cash flows. But no, HBF's in really good shape. We've got a fantastic board You realise that you're going through the changes we've been through this year, with Stuart moving on from being executive chairman and me stepping up from MD to chief executive. Sometimes you realise, and I've been around for a while, but you realise when things are handled well that you really do have quality people, and our board is, you know, absolutely full of quality people.
Well, that's good to hear. You mentioned, and it's a question, you mentioned that you've been in to see the new government. I was going to say, how are conversations with the new government? Probably a good time to ask you.
Yeah, no, I think some reflections on that, actually, events we've been at in the last few days. I mean, going back, if I go back to July, obviously the election result early in July, by the 30th of July, we were in to see the housing minister on the back of some big announcements on planning, mainly undoing, frankly, the damage that had been done in the final couple of years of the outgoing Conservative government. So we were looking at rewriting of the National Planning Policy Framework, the reinstatement of local house building targets. And then we kind of knew they were coming, but the one bit that we weren't expecting was around redesignation of Greenbelt, so-called Grey Belt. And I've got to say, it was really impressive to see not just politicians and the new housing minister, but also sometimes the people that get overlooked, who are the officials that work within the teams within the ministry, had done a fantastic job to get that done. So we got off to a really good start, and there was lots of positivity. The engagement that we've had from those officials in the meantime has been outstanding as well. And in some cases, these are exactly the same people that we would have had under the previous government, but under different management
direction.
And leadership. Absolutely, Steve. Yeah. So I think that perhaps given some of the animosity that there was between Michael Gove as housing secretary in the industry.
Did a great job, didn't he, Govey?
And
mate, you know, my mate, I love him dearly. I'm taking the piss, by the way. But
so some reflections on that. Yeah, so it sort of spills over, because I think that when you're the leader and people are looking for leadership, and they sense that the way to do this is to be divisive and unconstructive, then some people will follow. But at its heart, the people who at their heart, the people who work in MHCLG, you know, do what they do because they love housing. And it's been great to see the engagement that they've had. And similarly, you know, whilst it's quite a shock when the people you deal with in opposition become ministers, because then they're shielded from, you know, in terms of communication, they become shielded by their advisors and officials.
Yeah.
But broadly, it's been okay. I think part of the reason for reflecting on it is last few weeks have been more disappointing. You know, the budget, nothing in there for house building.
No, I mean, I find it very sad. I don't get the logic. I mean, just keeping on the planning side of it just briefly. I mean, I read this week, I'm not saying it's true, but we've got 8,000 applications going in the next couple of weeks, all with a recommendation for refusal.
Yeah.
I would imagine lots of them have got no right other than NIMBYism.
Yeah.
But I did find it was interesting that Angela Rayner came out and said, no, stop, I'm calling them in, this will happen. I mean, it's quite simple, really.
Yeah, we had a meeting, I won't go into details, but there's no doubt in my mind, and having met Deputy Prime Minister recently, there's no doubt in my mind that when she says this is the top priority, you know, is an outrageously large housing target, which will be a struggle to meet. But we've doubled output before in the decade after the global financial crisis. But yeah, going back to the Deputy Prime Minister, there's no doubt in my mind that she, and I think as well her senior colleagues, really do want to make a difference. And I think they've got off to a great start, you know, recognising that the planning levers that they need to pull, not just on planning policy, but also in having more capacity within the planning system, are absolutely key. I think the frustration is that you need to do more than just that. You need to get, if you want to create growth, you've got to get working on the market. And some of the stuff that we've pushed for on behalf of housing associations is clearly being heard and will happen, because the housing associations have been struggling. They're cash strapped.
Yeah, absolutely.
They need longer term certainty within their own finances, and we've supported within that. And actually, in return, the housing associations, the National Housing Federation, has supported us at HBF, which is to say, well, we need to do something for first time buyers. First time in 60 years that there isn't a government scheme to support first time buyers.
It beggars belief for me that, you know, average deposits now, I think for the country, 50 odd grand. The average age of the first time buyer is getting older.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing there. And that will stagnate with the housing market.
Yeah.
Not even in the new sector. Just you need those wheels to turn. And it was interesting, because of the podcast, I looked at the manifestos, not the Green Party, but all of the other parties said that if they got elected, they would bring in something for first-time buyers. I was a Conservative voter.
Yeah.
I won't be no more. And I was really hoping that Labour, particularly in this budget that we've just had, would have done something there, because it's instrumental. And it can generate so much in the way of revenue. They're looking, they've gone to town on trying to generate tax revenue.
Yeah.
But it just seems as though it's just been overlooked. Yeah. Hopefully that will change come the spring.
I think there is a recognition that there is a huge economic impact of building more homes, beneficial, GDP, jobs, UK products mainly. That is recognised. The fear factor for me, Steve, I think, in listening in, is that there's this perception that by making money easier to come by, making lending easier and borrowing easier, rather, that's going to massively push up house prices. And everyone reflects on Help to Buy to say, well, it was inflationary. In fact, if you look, there's only ever between 10 and 15% of housing transactions are new build. There aren't many industries where if you've got 10% market share, you're going to push the price for the other 90%. No. And if you track it back, we can now. Of course, we can look back on it and we can see that actually new build homes did increase in value, but actually not quite as much as existing homes in the overall scheme of things during that Help to Buy period. So I think there's a fear factor. I think there's quite a lot of fear. Some of that is really understandable, some of the stuff we work on in the shadow of the Grenfell Tower fire, some decision making, people are fearful. But I think also on the economy, there's this worry that, quite understandably, if we don't match supply in terms of creating demand, then it's just going to make some of the issues you describe with regards to affordability and deposits even worse. But I think we need to move those things together.
Yeah.
I think if we're going to do something for first-time buyers, it can be really targeted, and you can learn the lessons of other schemes like Help to Buy. So, yeah, it's difficult to see. There's a huge, huge demand out there for both. Well, clearly the waiting lists, temporary accommodation is one. But in terms of people wanting to buy a home, there's a huge demand. But we need to make that demand effective. And that's the job of government, really, to help achieve that.
It's interesting, because I had a guest on a while back on the podcast, and he made the point that he couldn't see, I said about housing crisis, and he said, I'm not so sure, I don't see, people in tents when I'm driving around the countryside. But I saw a figure the other day that in temporary housing accommodation, we as taxpayers, Great Britain PLC, £7.5 million quid a day we're spending.
Yeah.
I mean, my maths is not good, but that's a lot of money.
Yeah,
I mean, it would surely be better to be getting that not in temporary, to get that in the system that creates all of these other things. From, I'm just looking there at a mug, People move into the house, they buy some crockery.
Yeah.
People move into the house, carpets, curtains, all saucepans, all sorts. It just generates.
No, absolutely right. I think, it feels in some ways, with the temporary accommodation crisis that we have, the pent-up demand, people living in overcrowded houses, it feels in some regard that, both at a national and local level, we've got a bike with a puncture and we're pushing it along the road rather than actually fixing the puncture and getting back on it again. And I can't help but feel that. And I think actually, sometimes, again, reflecting recently on, sometimes it's not until it becomes personal. So, my wife and I have got four kids, and the eldest is just beginning to think about
moving out.
Yep. And then you begin to weigh up the options, and you look at the affordability, you look at the deposits that's needed, and she's doing well. But we could do so much better. And you know what, as well? It's so complicated. The number of ISAs that are available and what they can do. And I do worry for people that don't get decent advice, or maybe are not doing the best that they can, or maybe not achieving what they want to achieve just because they don't know what the options are.
Well, we did have a first-time buyer on here. Mm. And she came on and she was talking. And it surprised me. I mean, on that side of it, I've been involved in it pretty much all the way from my career. It shocked me that we don't really give first-time buyers a great deal of advice. It comes from other people.
does.
So it's an area that the industry, you know, this podcast is industry dominated, but it's actually for Joe Public as well to actually to look at us in a different light. But we don't necessarily get the right information out to first-time buyers to help them through on the journey. They don't know the costs involved.
Yeah.
Let alone actually, they know they've got to save for a deposit. But there's other things that are there. And as you say, it's complicated, isn't it?
It really is. And I think reflecting on recent issues as well. I'm generally very positive in terms of outlook and optimistic. But, you know, there are some things, if you were advising a young person, you know, what to do about, say, shared ownership, or what about a leasehold property? What about an apartment if you can afford a house? You know, making these types of decisions based upon recent history, and frankly, if I was to be critical, I'm sometimes not sure that the industry more widely, by which I mean, you know,
not just the new homes,
not just those who are building houses, but property in general, I'm not sure that we're clear in our messaging about to help people weigh these options up.
Well, I mean, it leads me nicely on to my next question. Does the industry, and I know you've got members, it seems to me, and I've learned so much on this podcast, it seems to me that we do want to be together, but we're not, and we don't do enough. And I'm not putting this at the HBF door, but we, as an industry, we don't do enough to promote ourselves in so many aspects.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet, I've had different people on from different companies, and they're all saying, we've got to do something.
Yeah. So going back a bit, Stephen, this conversation, that's part of the reason why I made that change, you know, to HBF. And I think about the strategies that we have, which are most important to us. Yeah, clearly, we represent the industry we need to. Yep. If we need to get together and create a view or make a point. But actually, as HBF, the various areas that we do work in, you know, so one is actually housing affordability. So making the case that we've just been discussing to say we need to do more, particularly for the young people of the country. Look at how well Help to Buy did do, not just for hundreds of thousands of people getting on the housing ladder, but also for the UK economy and the Exchequer. So housing affordability is a big bit of what we do. On the environmental side, an area that I've worked in quite closely for quite a number of years now, and I'm really proud of the work we do at HBF to promote the benefits of new homes with regards to lower carbon footprint, biodiversity net gain on site now, so leaving a good legacy. And that's really, really hit home, unfortunately, because it's taken a cost of living crisis and an energy cost crisis, but people are very aware that new homes are much cheaper to run, particularly space heating, than
old
homes.
I live in an old property, I can guarantee you.
You've got big bills. And skills as well. So, you know, promoting, it's not just about making sure we've got the pipeline of skills for the future, which is a challenge, but this attract piece around, particularly around younger people, is a big part of what we do at HBF. And I think that finally, you know, in terms of creating communities, and you know, the number of trees that we plant, the number of schools that house builders build, and we do a lot on economic benefits as well. So, yeah, the big thing for me is promoting the positives. Yeah, and there has been, you know, we needn't go into them today, but there's been a number of times in recent years where the industry has shot itself in the foot.
Yep.
And the one thing I've learned from that is that in the minds of people who aren't as close to this as you and I are on a daily basis, you know, some things stick.
Yep.
So they remember the bad things and they don't necessarily appreciate the good things that we do. So a large part of the work at HBF is actually promoting the positives and making the case for sustainable development and all the good stuff that comes with it.
Your members, house builders, different types of membership, what could they do to help you guys at the HBF? Because you're obviously our political voice. Mm. You're obviously our national voice. What could they do to help you guys? Is there anything, because obviously there'll be lots of people listening to this. I mean, I think we're getting up to close to 50,000 subscribers now.
Yeah.
And I know from when I'm travelling around, people in the industry are making remarks. Mm. What could your members do to give you more power to your arm, so when you're sitting there with the housing minister, that could make your case stronger?
One of the things we've touched on is talking industry up rather than down. And I understand that, you know, there are challenges for all different firms, but keeping holding those positives. We operate essentially, it's like a hub and spoke model. And if we're, as I said at the beginning, I see ourselves right at the center of the industry. And what's fantastic is that, the communications go up and down those spokes. So a load of the good stuff that we do goes into reports on the back of research and gets publicized. And we've got a limited voice, but actually it gets amplified through the fantastic marketing that individual house builders do about those benefits that we talk about. In terms of the bit that I'm always keen for members to do, to answer your question, it's actually about the other way. It's about getting involved. Now, we've got quite a large membership, and we've got people who are really active, like any organisation, and people give their time up on a voluntary basis, and some of them really love it. You can imagine the chance to get together with their peers and talk about issues of the day, and others maybe are too busy. But you're getting that feedback. The most important thing is for members to give us feedback so we know how they're finding things. And never was more important than during COVID, Steve. And we have to find new ways of working online, because some of the approaches that we'd used were quite old-fashioned. It was meetings around the country and phone calls. And who'd have heard of Zoom or Teams?
But Zoom was a lolly when I was a kid.
A nice lolly, yeah. And that was... For me, that was my early days of HBF, because I joined in 2020, and then by March, COVID had hit, and shortly after that, sites were... You could continue to build homes, but you couldn't sell them because the sales market was closed. Yeah. Something I'm very proud of, actually, is that by May, we worked with government at the time to get... And everybody, including removals companies and their federations, and sales and house moves are back on the agenda again by later in 2020. But going back to your question, what we really got from that and what I learned was that what we need is feedback. And actually, some of those technologies that we kind of had on our laptops or PCs, didn't know what it was, thought suddenly came to the fore. And we had some huge, we ran some really big events online for our members, who just needed to know about all of these new policies and schemes that were getting rolled out by government and what you could do and what you couldn't do. Yeah. But we needed to hear from them as well, because in order to devise solutions, like anything that we do, we need feedback from members about how they're finding things, what they would recommend to us, and then we make the case by pulling it all together.
One of the things that occurs to me is... Schools don't seem to have, in their everyday world, anything to do with construction and house building.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about trades and stuff like that. Are we as an industry doing enough to promote that, to actually say to, come on, let's get this back on school life?
Yeah, there's loads more that we could do there. The one thing that I am quite proud of is that both house builders and the construction companies, particularly the larger ones, do have ambassadors, and they do schools outreach. And we did a piece of work on the skills side, on the track side, to pull this together. Because what we pledged to do actually was to fill in what you might describe as the cold spots. Because what we discovered is it's actually that most schools were getting a visit from somebody in the industry to talk about the great careers that are often offered in house building. The great opportunities, because they are family. We can come back to that, but the opportunities are fantastic, and to make the case. And also, we helped at the centre of that to pull together consistent information that can be disseminated so that people are hearing the same sort of message repeatedly. But there were cold spots. Many of those cold spots, actually, maybe it's not a surprise, but they were around the coastline of the country. And then we provided funding collectively to make sure that those schools also got ambassadorial visits. But we're up against it. I think in some ways, you talked about the reputation of the industry, Steve, and actually the research that we do indicates that, you need to influence the influencer, and that might be a school teacher. It could be a parent.
Yeah.
And if they still believe that the industry is boom and bust, or they have no regard for the quality of new homes,
they're not going to bring
they're not going to make a recommendation. Whereas if you can turn it around and say, look what I've done. And I love some of the work we do on the ambassadorial side. My favourite events at HBF there's one we do every single year, which is the Future Talent Conference, where we bring in trainees, graduates, new starters from all sorts of organisations, and lay on a fantastic lineup of speakers and get them to do project work together. And there's a social element to it as well. So these are young people generally that are mixing with their peers. And when I look out across that audience and you see the diversity that it contains, it makes you really feel quite encouraged about the future of the industry. And the other one we do, which is closer to where we are today, is in Parliament. And what we've done is to pull together a prospectus which actually shows the huge range of job roles that exist. Because one of the things is, I think when some young people are being influenced, they think, you know, what jobs do we know this from research? House building, yeah, bricklayer.
Oh, yeah, no, it's immediately
the only job
associated is just actually, I'm going to be a labourer, I'm going to be... It's much
and
wider.
And we've got everything from designers, you know, in house building you've got marketing departments, sales, accountancy, you know, all interior design as well, the whole lot. So this prospectus sets out all those job roles by bringing in young people who are in those jobs and doing a profile, and they turn up to House of Commons. We run a terrace event with their employer as their sponsor, and we introduce them to MPs. And actually, one of the things about that is that, you know, sometimes MPs, I think it's much less so now, but there can be negative stories around house building in their areas. I think generally we've really turned that around. But this is hugely positive because you realise that, you know, you've got young people starting out in the industry, looking forward to the future, realising the opportunities they could have.
It's an amazing industry and to be involved.
That's another great event. So we need to do, as I say, you know, I don't underestimate the size of the challenge. There's so much more we need to do there. I've got kids of my own, and you think how many of them are going to end up working. One of them's showing a bit of hope. he's going down the, looks like the planning route. But, you know, in terms of even in my own household, making the case to say, you know, this is a great industry.
It's an amazing industry, you know, for sure. And it brings passion. Mm. And I meet so many people on my journeys that just love it. And you think, wow, and just seems to get missed out now. Mm. You know, tech, everyone wants to sit in front of a laptop.
Absolutely.
When we have people on from the property world on the podcast, I came up with this idea of a magic wand.
Yeah.
A year down the line, nearly, I've realised it's not very magic.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you three wishes. You're probably the most important person I've had in because you're actually sitting with the government. You're obnobbing, really. You've got three wishes that you can take into the Prime Minister, the Housing Minister, Sir Keir, Angela.
Yeah.
What three things would you say, these are the things we need to put in place today that are going to help the housing crisis?
Yeah, no, that's, blimey, that's tough. I think some of these are probably quite well-worn, and you know, I think politicians know this. I'll start with one, and maybe I'm wasting a wish here, but one of them is to be positive about the industry. And earlier in the podcast, Steve, we spoke about the previous housing secretary, who spoke negatively, generally, about the industry.
Very.
And that's really unhelpful because when you're trying to attract talent into the industry or speak about an industry, you need leaders to be positive about the industry. And I really believe, actually, with, you know, the senior politicians that you mentioned, they do get that. And we need a very positive approach to development in the country.
I think that's a great wish, by the way. I've had a number. I think that is a really great wish.
Just be positive. Be positive about the good stuff that we need to do. And where things do need to be improved, and the signs that this government might do this, is get people together and talk about it and say, would be helpful if you could move that along or do that. That's one thing. The other things we've spoken about, really, which is matching supply and demand, and stuff needs to be done on both of those. So the supply side, you know, we talk about planning policy, and it's great. You know, people can talk forever about changes to the planning, you know, policy documents, but actually we've got some massive blockages at the moment. There's this issue called nutrient neutrality, which is about the tiny, tiny, tiny contribution from new homes that can affect water courses, and it can be mitigated, and the industry is willing to pay for it. But in the meantime, it's gone for 5 years now, and the government, both the outgoing and incoming government, just haven't got a grip on that's holding up delivery of 160,000 new homes, which affects house building industry, but it's stopping people buying homes, it's stopping growth in those key areas. So that really needs to happen. That's a really easy one to solve. The other bit on the supply side is with the housing associations, who they need that certainty sooner so they can get back into the market, so that, because we need the private house builders need a housing association to partner with to deliver affordable homes, and that's fallen foul for a few reasons as well. So those are there's some sort of short-term stuff within that, which is around getting the supply side going. And probably a third wish would be, if that's two, would be on the demand side, which is creating simple and consistent financial schemes to get people
on the land
moving. And I realise, you know, as we earlier on, people were warning that if you turn that tap on, but we're not building any more homes, then you're going to create problems in terms of affordability. But you can do, we can do both together. We've done it before. Somewhere in there, there's also finally, I won't extend your three.
No, no, you can have another one because I like the one.
You like the first one?
Seriously, I like it. So
positivity, infrastructure. Do you know what clearly this new government's got ambitions in terms of energy in this country, but the truth is that we're building a fantastic product out on site, but it's so difficult to get the basic infrastructure to site. So we're talking about water, talking about drainage, which I've just touched on, and actually electricity, because as we move away from gas and move more towards using electricity for the primary sources of heating in homes, that creates a greater demand on the grid, which needs reinforcement. And even with renewables on the roof, we become more dependent upon those key service deliveries. And it's so difficult at the moment because we haven't kept up with, in terms of water supply.
Yeah,
it's well documented. We just haven't kept up in the country in terms of making sure that we can provide water to those new homes. Understandably, new homes use a lot less water than existing homes with all the fittings. But even then, we're being asked to go probably further than we really can, you know. So I said earlier on about looking my oldest daughter out at the weekend. You go in a nice starter home and there's no shower over the bath. But there is, because there's an ensuite with a shower. And it gets explained to you the regulations won't allow a shower over the bath. And there are reasons for this. And you think, well, what point, you know, how many people have a bath these days? You might as well put fish in it. And there's these, but that's how far the water regulations have got. So water, drainage, electric. So, yeah, if that was the other bit, which was, and I think that there is recognition of this, but and some of this is back to planning. So water, we haven't built any reservoirs for 30-odd years. Electricity is to do with pylons and transmission points. And drainage is really to do with watercourses, but not from problems of building new homes. So infrastructure is something that needs to be tackled.
Well, I've had people on use their wishes. I have to say, yours, in my view, have been the best. So I'm really glad that you are. Do you go to number 10 Downing Street, or do you have to go somewhere else?
I haven't been there for a few years, but the MHCLG offices is on Marsham Street, same with the Home Office. So we're in and out of there quite often.
Well, you've got some great wishes there, so please take them forward. I get your point about us as members of the HBF, of which I'm not, but, you know, more support back from you, more data to talk to you more. And that's going to give you more power, and you're in the prime position to drive that. I just want to touch, just before we finish, charities. The industry does so much for charities. You know, the construction industry, the house building industry. We are in tough times.
Yeah.
What doesn't seem as though too many people want to acknowledge that. Yeah. I know for a fact that charities are struggling. Are there any charities that are close to either your heart or to the HBF?
Yeah, I mean, I think in relation to the industry, we routinely look towards crisis, which performs a vital role. It's not directly related to house building itself or housing, but I think the industry that really pulls up, the charity that really pulls up my heartstrings is actually Marie Curie. And one of the things I'm really proud of is that my colleague Ben Rusgrove, and Paul Healy, who you might know.
No, I've 1 year, believe it or not, I won it.
Did you really?
Well, I think we cheated, but I think I actually got found under the table trying to, back in the days when you were trying to Google and I didn't know how to do it. But yeah, no, I've been to the brain game for many years.
So when I was at the old place at NHBC, Ben and Paul, who's very persuasive, kicked off the brain game, for those who don't know what we're talking about. Marie Curie do this in various industries, but the house building brain game held in house builder brain game held normally in April or May every single year down at the brewery in Chiswell Street attracts a really large and senior bunch of people and from right across the industry. And as you know, it's a great night, you know. We never lose sight of what we're there to do, which is to raise as much money as we can.
It raises big money as well.
The celebrities that turn up to do each round of the quiz. So I felt proud to be there at the beginning, providing sponsorship to get the thing off the ground. But yeah, that was just a moment in time. But Ben and Paul have done so well over so many years to push that. And, you know, I think what Marie Curie does, you know, cancer treatment, cancer affects everybody, doesn't it? Yep. You know, we've all been touched by it. And there are other charities as well. But I think that's the one where, you know, we all do stuff. And there's things that have gone on.
One of the nurses come along and she, and I've been there many a times where, you know, people are in bits because of the story where they're looking after people. Yeah. And later in life, my dad was a beneficiary for a few days of that particular charity.
Yeah.
So I know what a wonderful job it does.
Yeah.
But it is true. When we sat down, I said to you that time flies.
It does. It's been great.
It does. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Seriously, I mean it, Neil. When we started this podcast, one of my aims was to bring attention to public as well as the industry, that we had to start speaking up. Thank you for your time. You've given me a lot of confidence, mate, that we're in good hands. And I wish you well going forward. If there's anything we can do, let us know. But thank you very much.
Thanks,
for your time.
Steve. It's been great. Really definitely keep in touch. Great to see you today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Viewers, listeners, Neil, we've sat here. I do genuinely feel more confident now. I think he's a great man to have in place for us. Obviously, let's make sure we keep giving data back to the HBF. But thank you for your time. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Stay safe. Take care. See you soon.